Welcome to the Marketing AI Sparkcast, where AI meets modern marketing. Hosted by Abby Varma, a global leader in marketing, AI, and innovation, each episode brings you real conversations with leaders putting AI to work in strategy and execution. This episode is brought to you by Spark Novus and the Marketing AI Pulse community. Here's your host, Abby Varma.
In today's episode, we have an amazing guest and an amazing topic. So the shift from automation to autonomous marketing workflows is being made possible right in front of our eyes with AI, right? It's like the precursor to what we are going to have to deal with over the next couple of years with agents. They're already here. And one of the pioneering companies who has been doing this right from the get-go is Zapier. And we are excited and delighted to welcome Philip Lakin, who is the head of enterprise innovation at Zapier, in today's episode. Phil, welcome to the episode.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So excited. You are right in the thick of things, my friend. But before we unpack all of those things, just tell us a little bit about your background that led you to your current role. I know you've had a lot of career zigzagging. My favorite was the fact that you had a brief role in Law and Order. Like, I feel like I need the LaDon music right now, like the sound here. But yeah, from Law and Order, you were an entrepreneur, you were corporate, now you're at Zapier. We'll love to unpack all of that. So share that with us, please.
Hey, man. First of all, yeah, thanks again for having me. I definitely, like many ops folks or no-code slash automation folks or folks that are finding themselves at the center of AI transformation at their company, whether because they were like the tinkerer or voluntold to do that role, like all those folks, I also have a super non-traditional background. And for the first 10 years of my professional life, I was an actor, right? I was doing everything from Law and Order and Gossip Girl to films in Cannes and Tribeca Film Festival to off Broadway shows that you will never, ever hear about, nor do I want you to. And I, as a side job, I just fell in love with guerrilla marketing and direct to consumer, like on the ground guerrilla street team marketing. I just like really fell in love with it. And I eventually started my own company on that front. And we worked with B2C tech companies to help them promote their services with street teams in New York. One of our clients was Gett, who's an Israeli-based Uber competitor who was starting their New York branch at the time. And they offered to acquihire my team and I because they were like, look, we love this street team stuff, but we don't need more users. We really need more drivers. Like, we're really struggling on the supply front. So can we bring you and your street team in full time and your company in to help us just kick ass on the street team front to recruit drivers? And so we started to do that. And the first way that we did it was just like giving drivers flyers and like saying, hey, here's the address for our office in Midtown. Park for half the day. We'll pay for your parking and come and sign up to be a driver. And then you come and take a half a day. There was like a lot of paperwork and there was like a video they had to watch and training they had to go through and verification steps and all this stuff. And because you can't drive like an Uber or Lyft in New York City without being on the part of the Taxi and Limousine Commission. You need a license. So yeah, so we went through, we're doing that. It was going okay. And then someone at the company was like, hey, Phil, like, you know how to do street team stuff. Like, why can't we just onboard a driver completely in the field? Like, they don't have to come to the office at all. We go find the drivers where they are and let, you know, like one of their hangout spots, or it could be like one place where they're waiting for rides. So a good example was the JFK and LaGuardia parking lots where the drivers wait for rides and just go start onboarding people in the field. And I was like, cool. Yeah, let's give it a shot. And so we didn't do it digitally at all at first. All we did was we took our super manual paper process and just went to the field and said, do people even care about this or want to do this?
Wow.
And I kid you not, the first day that we did it, we got mobbed. People had never seen like representatives from the companies, the rideshare companies, caring enough to like literally come out to the field. And like we were saying, look, you could save Uber and Lyft. It's just more income for you. And we can get you signed up in 30 to 40 minutes. It ended up actually taking an hour. Like we like literally have different like guys at different stations, like literally working off the backs of cars, opening up their laptops, doing trainings. Like it was insane. So we're like, okay, clearly there's a need here. This is awesome. And then the goal was like, cool. Can you digitize the process, Phil, to make this go even faster and train even more people street team wise to do this? I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. What developers do I work with to build an app here? And they're like, no, you're an ops man. Just
you do it.
Figure it out, bro. I was like, oh, okay. cool. And so that's where I just started doing like a ton of Googling and just being like, could I figure this out? I don't know how to use like forms and stuff. And then so look, it started super janky. We started with a combination of, let's see here, HelloSign, which is like now a Dropbox company, like Google Sheets. And that was pretty much, and like some like Google Drive folders. Like that was pretty much it. It wasn't anything crazy. The problem was that the service was so bad in the field that we would get someone halfway through a form on Dropbox. And then it would cut out and they'd have to restart. And that was like a terrible. Terrible. So then it was like, okay, can we find offline stuff? So I started looking for offline no code forms that I could build that would sync on like iPads and like work offline. I found this company called Pronto Forms, and Pronto Forms worked with Zapier. And so I was able to like do everything in Pronto Forms, zap everything into Google Sheets that I needed to, and then also put everything from there into these folders that folks needed via Zapier as well. So that was kind of the glue that held everything together. And then, yeah, we had built a system that we could onboard a driver and in 20 minutes. And like that included showing them, like walking them through a full learning management system video that I also like directed, created, recorded, like with my acting background, produced. And dude, we onboarded, I think it was about 20,000 drivers in under a year and a half.
Wow. With your own homegrown Zapier, if you will.
Yeah. Zapier, Pronto Forms, Google Sheets, and a macro to like, and the web browser to take the information from Google Sheets when someone would get approved and put it into our homebrew like database for drivers. Yeah.
So that was the precursor to your company?
Yeah. So what had happened was I've cut my teeth in the tech sector by going through a layoff, right? I think it's a good mark for everyone to have at least once. So I remember we had a merger with this company called Juno. We got really excited because we're like, oh my gosh, Juno's been killing it. We're going to learn so much from them and we're so excited to work with them. And then they called my entire office into a hotel conference room and the really fancy bottles of water were out, like the expensive Fiji ones. And I'm like, they paid for the good water. This is going to be a bad day. Oh, yeah, they just laid us all off because they went with the Juno staff locally instead of the local New York staff. So we got some severance. We were laid off, had some time, and it was just like applying for jobs. I ended up like finding this company called Underdog that would put applications out for each of the top recruiters. I got accepted into those. That program, and they introduced me to this company called Compass, a real estate tech company. That is where I then did even more no code work. They were like, we're looking for someone to do no code stuff specifically for onboarding. And I was like, I did not know jobs like this existed. This is great. They're like, you're the guy. And I eventually became the first solutions architect at all of Compass, working across all of the ops departments nationally on all no low code projects. And it was awesome, man. So you scaled up. It was like 1500 real estate agents that we grew through that program. I like one of the best managers like I've ever had, this woman named Eleanor, who like helped shape my entire career to think, because I didn't even know what I was called, but she figured out that I was called a solutions architect. And so I'd eventually moved to Atlanta and I was like, oh yeah, I know we're going deep here, but I think like it's good for people to hear this story because it's so similar to everyone else's story, I feel like here. But yeah, I eventually had this idea for writing a newsletter. We're at the intersection of no code and operations. Newsletter became a community, became doing managed services, became eventually going full time and raising venture and building software on that front on the observability space. And then we raised like $8.5 million in venture, like 10,000 person community. Like we're getting really close to like shipping like a huge chunk of product. It took a long time to build because there were like no official APIs for most of the stuff we were doing. So we had to build it ourselves.
Yep.
And then we got acquired by Zapier. And so now I'm at Zapier. I'm the head of enterprise innovation here. And my job, I like to joke, is when CEOs and line of business leaders heard that Shopify AI mandate from the CEO of Shopify and are like, yep, we need that. I am the team at Zapier. I'm on the team at Zapier that helps bring that mandate, that AI mandate, to life at companies with all the experience behind us of helping many companies that are enterprise clients of Zapier do this behind the scenes. But also, we have an 89% AI literacy rate at Zapier. So we have more bots and like agents than we have people. We have a whole framework for hiring AI native folks. So we're pretty ahead of the curve. And so we're taking all the information we've learned from my clients on this front and all the stuff we've done internally. And like, my job is to help folks with that transition.
Amazing. That is such a cool story, Phil. And Zapier has evolved from its sort of humble days of if this, then that, to really full-on AI orchestration, right?
Yeah.
So when you guys use AI orchestration, what do you really mean and how should organizations think about that?
It's a great question. So it's a new term, right? And I think traditionally when folks have thought of Zapier, like our bread and butter is triggers and actions, like simple across like your SaaS application. So if someone fills out this form on Google Forms, update our CRM in HubSpot and add them to our mailing list or a sequence in MailChimp or something like that. That's our bread and butter. That's what we're known for. We now do that with over 8,000 apps and 30,000 actions between those apps. And tons of our apps now have custom actions where even if we don't have the action, you can create it yourself in natural language. It's pretty cool. But where AI orchestration comes in is, so first of all, it was this really funny thing that happened. When AI first came out in this like world that it's in now, like this like generative AI stuff, the first thought that everyone had was like, that's it. All the iPaaS companies like Zapier are totally cooked now, right? Like people are just gonna use AI to create these connections. Like it's AI can read API documentation, AI can do this stuff. What people found out pretty fast was people don't want to do that. And that AI is not that reliable for creating those connections or managing or maintaining them. And people still want that visual interface that Zapier spent 10 years perfecting. And so what ended up happening was Zapier and all the other companies in our space were like, hold on. People want to orchestrate this AI. People don't want to just go to the ChatGPT window or the Gemini window or the Claude window and type this stuff out and copy paste stuff and then bring it in. They want this stuff to manually hit their workflow. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. So the marketing side. In today's world, let's say somebody submits a form on your website and it gets routed to you, the AE, and you get a Slack message being like, hey, Phil, here's like a great person you should be reaching out to. Here's the info about them, right? What most AEs are doing today is they're saying, cool, I'm going to take all the information from this lead, right? Maybe some enrichment data that our B2B data broker gave us, right? And the information they submitted on the form. I'm going to mix it with some type of prompt that I write about me and our offering. I'm going to put that into ChatGPT or some kind of like chat interface and say, write an email to this person to get them to book a call with me. Then I'm going to copy and paste that into an email and send it to them. That's like pretty common workflow that folks are doing today.
Yeah.
What AI orchestration means is very simply, can the system talk to the chat provider for you without you having to do it? So what that means is in Zapier, we now have ways to talk to the LLMs without you being involved. And so what that looks like is someone submits a form, right? And say the first step of that form is the first action step in that Zap is cool. Take all of the data from that form, so their company name, their email, the reason they reached out, the company URL. Take all of that, put it into a prompt, and mix it with some things that I'm putting into that prompt, right? So make some information about our company, about me, about general things that would be good to put into a prompt to generate that email. Maybe my tone of email, an example of a successful email that I've written, whatever, right? And then the next step would be send an email from me. Right? From my Gmail account, right? That or Outlook account, right? So now, anytime somebody submits a form and it gets routed to me, right? Oh, hey, Baloo.
Ooh, yeah, we're happy.
Anytime somebody does that, they will now instantly get an email from me like it was written from me personally. Now, that will look sus, right? Because like, it's a pretty decently sized email, looks pretty personalized, right? It's not just, hi, first name, here's a canned response. So maybe I'd also throw in like a 7 or 8 minute delay. So it looks like I actually did something. It wasn't like just auto-generated.
Automated. Yeah.
And that right there is AI orchestration. That is bringing AI into your workflow systematically so you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
That's it. That is it. Now, there's a difference between that and what an agent is and where an agent fits into that, but we can go into that separately.
Sounds good. So one of the most common questions that we get asked, like we work with CMOs and marketing leaders as part of what my company SparkNovus does, is when it comes to AI-based workflows, is Zapier or Make or N8N or what have you, there's a whole host of these providers now. Yeah. And how do you guys differentiate yourself? Because this space is getting crowded, but also there's a lot of interest in leveraging AI. Make life easier for all of us.
I'm going to tell you a different point of view there, and that I don't think the space is crowded at all. I think there's so much more space. Like it is a massive space and still so few people are actually doing this stuff. So, and I think that N8N and Make and some other platforms in the space, like they're pretty highly differentiated when you actually get to the nuts and bolts of it. Here's Zapier's bread and butter, right? If you've got like a pretty small, highly sophisticated technical team, right? That is like just trying to basically move faster, right? Or you've got like someone who's going to dedicate most of their job to thinking about this stuff, right? Look, N8N and Make are like, they are built like developers think, right? And they're awesome. They're super powerful tools. We always learn things from each other all of the time, right? They push us, we push them. But I'd say that's for that audience, right? So if someone's got like some highly sophisticated folks or like folks that are going to be dedicating a lot of time to this stuff, I'll even tell folks like, dude, honestly, if you have folks that are trying to think or thinking already like a dev, like some of this stuff might make more sense than like N8N or Make, especially for smaller teams. Now, when it comes to Zapier, right, we were always from the beginning the like easiest, one of the easiest like to use platforms, right? Folks could figure out how to use Zapier super fast. And now the AI even easier. You type a sentence, you can get an automation. Like it's that easy, right? And not just an automation, but an automation that you can use drag and drop stuff and WYSIWYG stuff to just like figure out, get exactly what you want. For the uninitiated, WYSIWYG just means what you get, right? Like it's very easy to get up and started with Zapier. And that's been really appealing to the folks that are like, yo, we don't just want a small group of people doing this. We want everybody doing this, right? I think that's where our bread and butter is. Like when you want everyone at your company to be doing this stuff and lowering the barrier of entry immensely, and you want the enterprise safeguard features to that, that's where folks are bringing in Zapier. The other side of the equation is like folks like Workato have done a great job going out through the enterprise way before we did. Yeah. And I think that that's really awesome because it's such a big market, right? Informatica, MuleSoft, Workato. But I think the thing on those fronts is that like, those companies have done just a phenomenal job in like selling directly to the CIOs and like the IT departments. But end users like who are in ops or in marketing or in sales often have a lot of trouble figuring that stuff out, or it just becomes too expensive and burdensome to get everyone the ability to build workflows like that, because those things aren't priced that way or built for those types of users. Whereas we are. And so I think we've had to fight the opposite thing on the Zapier front, which is I can't get technical with Zapier. So it's like the N8N and Make side. And is it really enterprise ready? And the reality is that over the past few years, it's like Zapier's been focused on this. We have code steps and functions by Zapier that you can purely write code in Zapier. Not a lot of people know this, but you can even on our developer platform, if you have an app at your company that's not on our app store, like that's like a private homebrewed thing that you've created, you can literally create an integration in Zapier so that your team can use it and no one else, you know, on the Zapier cloud will have access to it. It's just for your company. So that is awesome. And then on the other side, dude, we have all the, like, we've got all the enterprise stuff that you'd ever need, right? SSO and SCIM and really amazing observability and observability dashboards, super admin stuff, the ability to like separate out things by workspaces and like a way better, like way more economic way of approaching that too, that just makes more sense for enterprise folks. So that's the stuff that we really have to work against, is like less know our competitors, but more so the perception of what we got famous for, which is like small SMB, if this, then that type of stuff.
Yeah. Simplicity, easy to use, you know, super easy to master. Oh, love that. So one of the things it touched upon before we started talking about this space going backwards a little bit was agents, right? So we're seeing, like I said at the top of the episode, we're seeing a transformation from automation to autonomous, like where people are like, yes, you have triggers, but I want those triggers to figure stuff out themselves. And it's amazing how anytime there's a new technology revolution, people's expectations immediately skyrocket on what it should be doing. What are agents? How do you differentiate that with orchestration that you mentioned earlier?
Yep.
And how should people think about leveraging, and where should they think about leveraging agents?
Yeah. So first of all, I'd say that agents are under the umbrella of AI orchestration, right? What I described earlier, so there's like a zap, which is the traditional like trigger action. There's an AI zap, right? That is like an AI enabled zap, which is there's like an AI step that calls out to an LLM and brings data back into the zap, right? That's under AI orchestration. But so are agents and agentic zaps. So I'll tell you the difference and what those are. So an agent, first of all, if you've seen all the posts on LinkedIn, common agent to get my 50-step workflow, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? You can make $10,000 a month like by selling this template. That's all a bunch of just like pure horse crap, right? Like I'm going to tell you, you'll never need to download one of those things or think about one of those things ever again. Okay? Here's the deal. On any platform, all an agent is a few basic components. There is a trigger, right? So something happens, right? Now that something can be on Zapier one of three things, right? It could be there's some change in a system to something, right? So a field gets updated, a form gets submitted, a status gets changed, a new row gets added to a record, or a spreadsheet, something like that. Something happens, right? Okay. The other thing that it could be as a trigger is a manual intervention. I, Phil, go and press this button, or I start chatting with agents just like chatbots usually. And you do that in Zapier too. So I go and start, I call this agent to wake up because I start talking to it, or I press this button, or I press this button in my Chrome extension, or I manually trigger it somehow. The third thing is time-based, which is I want it to run every hour, every minute, every day, every something, right? And then I'd argue that like things like web scrapers and monitors fit into that first bucket because you can trigger an agent every time like a scrape runs, right? To check, okay, did something change on this website or something like that. So those are your triggers. Now, the next thing is like an abbreviation that I like to remember for the what are the components that make up the agent after the trigger is KIT, right? KIT stands for it needs some access to knowledge, right? So somewhere there's got to be some knowledge that it's accessing, right? And that knowledge can literally just be the internet and Google, right? So it can go and search Google and the web for you. Very similar to like how if you enable web search in like ChatGPT, it's just doing that. It's just searching the web for you, right? As like a, as an autonomous agent. So it can be the internet, but it can also be your full CRM instance. It can be a ton of internal docs. It can be your full wiki, right? It's just, it can be a mixture of those two things. It can be a ton of knowledge, right? So you give it access to knowledge, right? At minimum, you're giving access to the internet, but at max, you're also giving access to a ton of your other internal tools. The I, which is, I think, the most important part of KIT, is the instructions. Unlike a linear workflow, if this happens, then do this. Here's your very hard-coded path that things can go down, whatever. I stands for instructions because you're literally writing a JD for your agent in human English in Zapier. Some platforms do it a little bit differently. We make it really easy. It's just like you literally just write what you want your agent to do like you would tell a human. And those are what we call instructions. And so that could be like anytime this trigger goes off, I want you to search the internet, rank this person from 1 to 10 based on everything you know about our company from our internal wiki, like our knowledge, right? And use extra data you find about them on the internet that you weren't able to pull in from the form they submitted, right? And maybe also we only really like to work with companies that mention, I don't know, sustainability efforts somewhere on their website. Tell me yes or no if the sustainability is mentioned on the website. If yes, give me the exact link and copy so that I can recycle that into my outreach to them. Boom, that's the agent, right? On the K and I front. Now on the T front is the last part of the agent, that's tools. You can give an agent access to your tools to do things, right? So I can say, in this tool, I want you to be able to read and write things. In this tool, I want you to be able to update things. In this tool, I just want you to be able to maybe search things very specifically. And why the tools part is really important outside of just the knowledge working, just search and read, is because when I give the agent that job description, right, I want to say to it something like, cool, your job is to rank this person, is to search the internet on this. So let's say someone submits a lead, right? Let's take the example I gave earlier, right? And by the way, this what I'm about to describe is what I call, we'll come back to it. Let's just say you're just building this on the agent, right? So the agent, I say the trigger for this agent is somebody submits this form on our website. That's the trigger. And then the instructions I give the agent are when someone submits this form, take all the fields from that form, do internet and Google research about them, look at their website to see if they have a sustainability thing mentioned, put yes or no, give me a field back that says yes or no about that. And if yes, put another field saying the exact website page and give me another field saying what's the exact quote about their sustainability mission. Rank them 1 to 10 based on the following criteria. And I would probably use ChatGPT to help me come up with some criteria. Oh, and also look at all the records in our CRM to help me like rank how likely this person and company is to close based on what they submitted in the form and historical information that we have. Then when you're done with that, I want you to put all of that information into the CRM. I want you to send a Slack message to me with that information. And I want you to send that email out to them like trying to book a call if they're maybe above a, if they're like an 8, 9, or 10 that you rated them 1 through 10. If they're below a 5, just drop them into a sequence and let me know via Slack. Oh, but if there are 6 or 7, I want you to send me a Slack message with some basic information about them that you've gleaned with 2 buttons that say yes or no. This is a very, it's called a request approval function in Slack. We have it in Zapier. It's like human in the loop function. And ask me if I should approve this person or not. because I don't want you to guess. And then I can send them down either the sequence path or send them the email and try to book a call with them. And that is an agent right there. And you can describe that to an agent like you would describe it to an intern. And you could give it access to your tools just like you would give an intern. And it would just do the job. Now, I hear a lot of people potentially thinking, whoa, that sounds a lot like what you could potentially do with a Zap, right? Or like with a regular AI-enabled workflow. And you're right. There is no fine line between the two. There are tons of things that you can do in workflows that you can do with agents. The difference between them really comes down to, when do you want to sacrifice determinism for inference to get your, where the agent would benefit from some creativity and free will, versus like the observability and logging that you get a little bit more cleanly with things where you don't want to you don't want the agent to think at all.
Or almost like deterministic or non, like very.
Yeah. 100%. So look, if I'm having it fill out the same exact fields every time somewhere, right? Like, I don't want an agent to just like wheel and deal that. I want that to be extremely deterministic. But if I wanted to search Google and figure out 1 through 10, that's really hard to write 10 different paths for and figuring out all of that stuff and like writing 10 different prompts around like what that would mean. I just want you to use your brain and figure that out and give me that field back.
Yeah.
And so when you have an agent that starts getting really complex, now you can do two things with it, right? Thing number one is you can break it out into a few different agents that work together, right? So the agents can talk to each other as the triggers, right? Called a pod of agents, or some people in Zapier, some people refer to that as a swarm. Or what's very cool about Zapier is we do not force you in Zapier to choose, should it be fully deterministic or should it be fully agentic, right? We actually let you do both. So check this out. You can build like everything I just said. So someone submits a form, rate them 1 through 10, send them the email, all that stuff. You could do that in Zap. You could do that all with one agent and the results would be fine, right? The problem is everybody knows when you talk to ChatGPT and you say, hey, ChatGPT, give me feedback on this 30-page paper, you're going to get way better results if you say, hey, just give me feedback about the specific thing one page at a time. You're always going to get better results the less you give it, the more specific you are. So you can break that out into a bunch of agents, or you can have what we call an agentic workflow, where you have a deterministic workflow that strips out certain things for an agent to do and bring back. So let me give you an example of how that would work. So I can have a workflow in Zapier that's the trigger in this traditional Zap is somebody submits a form. The next step is, hey, pause the workflow, take everything we learned from that form submission, bring that to an agent, have the agent look up everything about this person on the internet and rate them 1 through 10 on this criteria. Then come back and have the agent add these fields to the workflow. What are they 1 through 10? And why? And that's it. That is it. And maybe add one other field around, like, did they have that thing on their website about the sustainability initiative? Yes or no. And the additional fields if they did. That's it. It's just doing that. It's a very simple job. That is, they're all very like non-deterministic things. Then it brings us back. It puts us in very deterministic fields. And then I can keep running my workflow where I could say, okay, now there's a deterministic path. If it's 1 through 5, send it down the sequence path. If it's 6 or 7, send it to me in Slack for approval. If it's 8, 9, or 10, send them, wait 7 minutes and then send them the email. Before you send them the email, use AI to craft that email. So I'm using my AI tokens appropriately. And like, that is an agentic Zap where you're combining the best of both worlds.
Love it. Now, that is super powerful, but a lot of things, we're still, as powerful as that is, we're still in the early days of AI and agents doing stuff. So truly, in sort of production type scenarios, what are AI agents realistically capable of doing today? Are there limits that exist to where you would want to use them?
In today's world, if you've got a company telling you we've got AI agents that can just like book qualified leads for you, I'm like, I would investigate a little bit, right? Here's the thing. Agents can think and determine things, but they can go off the rails, right? And like, they still need human managers and they still need quality assurance checks and they still need human loops for certain things. And so the biggest problem that people have with agents today that I see is not that the technology is not there And not that the technology is not accessible. If you can type a job description, you can create an agent in Zapier, because that is literally that straightforward. Problem that most people have is they don't know what the hell they want. They've never sat and actually thought about what would be the job description of this person. And so they get crappy results because they are exporting all of the critical thinking to AI, right? And not just like thinking, okay, what do I actually want this thing to do? And then how can AI help enable that at scale? And then where should I strip out things deterministically? Where should I strip out things for a human? They don't know because they're not sitting and thinking about those hard questions, or they've never been a BDR themselves, right? They just don't know. Now, the folks that have been, let's say, a BDR, want to help scale outreach, dude, you don't want AI experts, AI gurus, experts coming up with this stuff. You want your best BDR trained on this stuff because it's very easy to learn and train on. And then you want them to come up with these programs. You want to train them on all of these things like Zapier and Clay and all of this stuff. Those are going to be your best GTM engineers, are your best BDRs, SDRs, and AEs that really know this stuff well about your company. You want to empower them with the tools to then go and do this stuff. Like, that is the plan.
Nice. And you touched on GTM. So let's unpack that quickly on for our listeners. Give us an example of an agentic workflow within the GTM realm, if you will. Yes, and talk about maybe the tools that are involved and what that workflow could look like.
Yeah, I was working with this real estate company the other day that helps, it's relocation services. And when big corporate companies announce a move, they need to know about that because they want to go reach out to that person who's responsible. They've got an agentic workflow it's all just one agent. It's very simple. All it does is it gets triggered once a day and it reads a few different websites for news updates that track moves or for corporate companies of a certain size. When it finds an article that is, and see, this would be really hard to build with a filter or like a pathing or determinist thing. So you just can basically say, hey, if it looks like they're moving or whatever, I want to know. And by the way, anytime you write an agent job description or anytime you write a prompt, you should be having AI help you write that prompt. You should never just give it your own thoughts. Like, you should say, help me write this thing. We have an improved prompt feature in Zapier, but if your tools don't have that, you should be going to AI and asking it, like, can you write a prompt for me about this? And then edit that prompt, because AI is better at talking to AI than you are every time. Okay, so it looks at these websites every day. It identifies who has a move coming up. If they do have a move coming up, it will help qualify them. So is this the type of company that we work with? And then if it is, it will find the potentially right contact based on all of their historical CRM knowledge around like who are the types of contacts and like their titles and relevant folks. And it will ping their SDR team. It will also find the right SDR to send it to based on who's historically close, stuff like this, and who's up in the queue. It can figure out some lead routing stuff. And then it sends that first email on their behalf. So in the background, there is like a robot looking at websites, qualifying if they're the right person to reach out to. And these are places that signals just don't live through an API, right? It's just on the web. And this is stuff that people would pay a lot of money for in the past. Oh my God, how much money have people wasted on AI intent signals? Like paying, dude, that's something you could set up in Zapier and literally be paying like, I don't know, $10 a month to have running for you. It's stupid.
Yeah. It's opening up all kinds of opportunities now. But what does that mean? Let's switch gears in terms of people, the impact in people, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, AI takes on more execution. How do you see the role of marketers or like operation leaders or SDRs or BDRs? All of these roles are going to get impacted. What is your assessment of what the future sort of marketing org chart may look like as a result of this? In addition to, of course, the orchard having agents as part of it, but the traditional roles, how do you see? Because I feel like lines are blurring.
Things are blurring. So check this out. I can tell you that it is going to somewhat resemble or take inspiration from what's happening in the sales world, as many things have in the past. Sales folks had like sales ops before marketing folks had marketing ops, right? Sales is like a revenue driver, always gets the cool new shiny stuff and figures stuff out before every other department, right? And so the good news is your sales has figured this out already. And this is, I think, similar things can happen in marketing. What you now have in sales is this new role called GTM engineer. And GTM engineer can do what, with the power of AI, what 5 or 6 people used to have to do. And it's amazing how efficient it is. Like, it's mind-blowing. Now, they're hard roles to hire for because they have to know how to do all of those things on some level, right?
Yeah.
Or at least know enough about, you know, a few of them and be learning on the job the other few. But like, you do have to know a lot of stuff. It's not, you have to know a little bit about marketing. You have to know a little bit about systems. You have to know a little bit about AI and its capabilities. You have to know about the tools, right? You have to know about all of the things. But when you do, oh my gosh, that role's an unlock. Because, okay, everything I explained to you before, that one agent, that is maybe one of like 10 agents that is managed by a GTM engineer for managing a play. So that would be like one play. A GTM engineer may have 10, 20 different plays they're managing at any given time. And then constantly updating and changing those or adding new ones and removing ones that aren't working, right? So they're helping come up with plays. They're helping execute the plays. They're helping optimize the plays for outbound. They're doing all that stuff. And that used to be the job of 5-6 people. And now we just have one person doing all of it. So I think the same consolidation is going to happen in marketing where less people are going to be doing more efficient work. Now, let me talk to the thing that freaks everybody out when I say that, right? What does that mean for the future? Does it mean there's going to be less people doing this work? Yes, it just does. Do I think it's going to open up more opportunities for different types of work? Absolutely. But the best thing that anyone in marketing can be doing right now, whether you're a marketing leader, whether you're the beginning of your marketing career, considering career marketing, whether you're mid-level, the only thing that I recommend that folks do that will change the game for you, because remember, you don't have to, when a bear is chasing you, right, and your friends, you don't have to be the fastest. You just don't want to be the slowest, right? So all you got to do is once a day, or maybe 3 times a week, put 15 to 30 minutes on your calendar. Just play with these tools.
Learn.
That's it. Build a Zap. Build an agent, right? Build one of these things, whether it's offline or just for your own personal productivity. It doesn't matter, right? Just play with the tools. If you do that enough, you will naturally start getting curious about what this could do at your job. And you'll find tools your company maybe already has, or you'll get them to adopt new tools, where if you start connecting the dots between what's possible with AI and what you know about your role in company and field, the world needs like thousands upon thousands of more of those translators. It is the number one in-demand thing I talk to folks about is we don't need more AI experts, Phil. We don't need more on-the-ground marketing people that don't know AI. We need more people that can bridge the gap between the two.
Yeah, love it. And I think I prescribe to that because honestly, we run one of the fastest growing marketing AI communities called the Marketing AI Pulse. And we put in a lot of effort in terms of training and webinars and in-person training certification classes and all that kind of stuff. Because to me, I think this is, you should really invest in yourself to all the listeners. And I love that. I love the way you said it. You know, when the bear is chasing you, you don't want to be the last person. So to me, I am going to use that on LinkedIn right after this episode recording.
I'm loving it.
I love it. All right, man. Whole stretch here. Last question. As you think about the future, right? There are so many possibilities. I am so excited. The pace of AI innovation is just phenomenal. But what is it that you were right in the thick of things, right? Enterprise innovation. So talk to us a little bit about what gets you excited and fired up.
You know, it gets me and excited and fired up. And it's like funny because I'm like, I'm literally in the middle of plug working on a book on this exact topic around my story and all of this stuff. But
love it.
What gets me jazzed is that like automation and no code, look, 90% of what was possible with all of that stuff is like what people are excited about today. The difference is that AI was not in the zeitgeist. The Shopify memo from their CEO hadn't come out. Every CEO in the world wasn't thinking if we're not AI first, we're losing. It was in the news every single day. And so there wasn't as advancements happening this fast. There, because of that, there's this renewed, or there's not even renewed, there's this new interest in our field. So it feels like everybody showed up to our house party.
Yeah.
Like citizen development, no code automation house party that had been just like further bolstered by this stuff. Yes, some improvements for sure, but nothing like crazy drastic, to be honest. And what's funny is like when we talk to CEOs that are excited about AI, we're mind blown how mind blown they are when they just build their first Zap, not even with an AI step. They're like, I didn't know this was possible. Why the hell are we paying for X SaaS tool for $100,000 a year? what gets me the most gas is that more people than ever are going to get into this field because of this excitement. And however booming people think it is, there can't be enough people being these translators. There just can't be enough of them. And the people that were in the no-code space are primed to be the leaders here. But like, we're still in this window right now where if you can help translate this stuff and help learn, if you can learn some of the fundamentals here around AI, no-code, on just a very applied basic level, literally, if you just built those workflows that we talked about earlier, you're in like the top 2 to 5% of folks, right? Like, I'm just excited for more people to get in and build.
Awesome. Phil, thank you very much. This was so much fun. And to our listeners, make sure you follow Phil on LinkedIn, specifically. Amazing stuff. Lots of learning, lots of videos, takes and trip. Don't miss out on the opportunity. And of course, like Phil had said, don't be the last person when a bear is chasing you. So invest in yourself, train, learn, go to Zapier, go to whatever your tool of choice is, your technology of choice is. And thank you very much for listening. And Philip, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Thanks for listening. Big thanks to Spark Novus and the Marketing AI Pulse community. You can join the community at marketingaipulse.com.